Judiciary come to order. The Judiciary Committee is in order at 1:32 in the afternoon of Wednesday, March the 9th, 2011. We have a full committee here. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Pascal, Senator Coghill, and Senator Wilikowski, myself, Senator French. We have principally board confirmations up today, and we're going to jump right into the very first one because we have a gentleman who has, to my understanding, stepped out of a parole board meeting to appear at this confirmation. So he's right in the thick of performing his duties. And so let's turn to Mr. Daniel Morris. Mr. Morris, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. If you could just go ahead and introduce yourself, put yourself on the record, and tell us about your continued interest in the parole board, and then, that'll be a good start.
Well, thank you for letting me get into this quickly. My name's Daniel Morris. I've been serving. This is my first week with the parole board, so it's been a trial by fire. The board itself, I've been impressed with the quality of personnel at work here for the parole board, the support staff, and the members of the current parole board. I'm excited about this job. I come from a background of law enforcement, 23 years in law enforcement, 3 years as a military police, 20 years with the Kenai Police Department, the last 9 as the chief of police there. I've been retired for the past over 8 years. I am looking forward to this opportunity to serve on the parole board. It's, from my perspective, a very important function, and I appreciate the opportunity to do this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Tell me a little bit about your law enforcement background. You were the police chief for the city of Kenai, Alaska, for how long?
For 9 years.
And how large of a department is that?
Between the police, communications, animal control, 25 employees. During my time with the department, I was also served as on the state Alaska Police Standards Council. I served there for one appointment for 4 years. I served about 2.5 of those years as the chair of that council. I have a bachelor's degree in criminology, associate's degree in criminal justice administration. This has been a criminal justice field has been my experience in life.
No, you've got a very lengthy history there, Mr. Morris. I see you were a patrol officer with the police department there in Kenai starting back in 82. U.S. Army military police experience prior to that. Tell me, during the time that you were with the Kenai Force, did you ever have occasion to appear at parole board revocation hearings or things like that? What brushes, if any, in the past have you had with the parole board?
Actually, sir, none with the parole board itself, just with Department of Corrections through the facility of Wildwood.
And tell me a little bit more about that.
That was just in the capacity as a police officer. We interacted with, they had a pretrial facility there. As the chief, we normally would have a peninsula-wide law enforcement criminal justice head meeting. A lot of times we would have the prison superintendent attend those meetings. We also interacted with the parole officers at the Kenai office and, you know, helping them carry out their duties when they would revoke probation, that type of thing.
Certainly. And just out of my own curiosity, where is the parole board meeting now? Where are you now?
We're currently at the parole office next to the J.C. Penney parking garage.
Fine place to be. Thank you. Those are the questions I have. I'm turning to other members of the committee to see if they have questions for you.
Just if I could.
Senator Pascan.
Just as a general philosophy question, what is your thoughts regarding the way you would approach service on the parole board?
Now, first of all, keeping in mind public safety above all else, I realize that everybody that comes in front of the parole board at some point in their life will get out of the correctional facility and be back in public life. I guess I picture myself of treating these people with respect holding them accountable for their actions, and making sure the best interests of the state and the state citizens are above all else.
Follow-up questions? Don't see any. Mr. Morris, I just want to thank you for stepping forward to serve yet again. You have done other volunteer service along the way, long and distinguished public safety background. You look like a good fit for the parole board from my perspective. Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Through the chair, and I just have one question out of curiosity. I would echo the chairman's comments. Mr. Morris, you look well qualified, and thank you for your years of service in the Kenai Soldotna area, your service to the Women's Resource Crisis Center, the Police Standards Council, all of the things that you've done, certainly to our military, the training you've done at the FBI. And my question is just out of curiosity, when you were on the Alaska Police Standards Council, you were the chair and the vice chair, and it says that you made recommendations for the Alaska Administrative Code pertaining to Alaska Police Standards Council responsibilities, and I was just wondering what changes those were that were made, and were they adopted and finalized into law?
That was a very good question, Senator McGuire, and I am drawing a blank. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It has been some time back, and I cannot recall. I can't recall, to be honest with you.
No problem, and I didn't mean to trump you or anything like that. I'm just curious about it. I think it's a very important role, you know, in light of the Rawlings case and other things. It's really important we do have a Police Standards Council, and the public sometimes forgets that we do have it, and appreciate your service on it. And if you remember what they are at some point and you want to email me, you know, we're just on the state homepage there. I'd love to hear what it is at some point. And if you forget about it, it's okay. You're more than qualified to serve, and I'll be voting in favor of your nomination. Didn't mean to trump you there.
I'm sorry, Mr. McGuire.
Very good. Further questions for Mr. Morse? When here, CNE, I would solicit a motion to forward his name onto the full body. Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we forward this nominee's name onto the full body for confirmation.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, Mr. Morse, thank you so much for being here today. Your name will be forwarded on to the entire legislature for a vote in a joint session towards the end of the legislative session.
Thank you for your consideration.
Yes, sir. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Let's set the confirmations aside for just a moment, because we do have the revisor's bill that I know you've all been studying very carefully during your spare time, and we had a hearing on it. I'm satisfied with the shape of the revisor's bill in. Any comments, questions, remarks, or observations from the committee?
Senator Wilkowski, I have a few amendments.
Excellent. Excellent. Bring them on.
Mr. Chairman, I know.
Senator Wilkowski.
We actually did make a number of changes in the State Affairs Committee, so
I'm jealous.
Cleaned it all up.
I am jealous.
But if you're ready for a motion.
Motion, please.
I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill number 61, /I, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved on to the next committee. Let's take a short at ease to do the paperwork on that bill. We will go back on the record next with a confirmation hearing for William Granger, who has been nominated to serve on the Board of Governors. And Mr. Granger, I think you may be on the line by now. If you are, go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee, put yourself on the record, and tell us about your continued interest in the Board of Governors.
Yes, I am on the line. Thank you. Bill Granger here. I'm a lifelong resident of Anchorage. I'm a banker by profession, employed by Wells Fargo Bank, have been for 30-plus years. Previously on a Board of Governors, I think for 9 years, and I've been off now for a year and a half or so. And happy to answer any questions you might have.
Maybe just tell us about you're on the Board of Governors for 9 years. Why wasn't that enough?
Well, I've been asked that question before. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a glutton for punishment.
Any issues or things you tackled during those 9 years that stand out as you look back on the service that you've already performed?
Well, I think there were several things that happened. There was, a good amount of streamlining in the areas of discipline. The Board of Governors instituted a free online research system to its membership. There were many tweaks and changes to the rules. There was a balancing of the annual budget. It was a pretty busy 9 years, believe it or not.
And if I'm not mistaken, you were first nominated for the Board of Governors by Governor Knowles, and then renominated by Governor Murkowski, and it appears that you've now been renominated by Governor Parnell. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's true.
And just for the members' information, because I'm not sure if I was 100% aware of this until today's meeting, but the Board of Governors, Alaska Bar Association, 12 members, 3 are non-attorneys appointed by the governor, and then there are 9 active bar members who are elected by active bar members. So we as legislators only have influence over the 3 non-attorneys who are appointed by the governor. We confirm them, but the other 9 I do not believe come before us for confirmation. So it's we see just a fraction of the Board of Governors. Of course, Mr. Granger is a non-attorney being nominated to serve in one of those non-attorney positions. And Mr. Granger, you are still employed at Wells Fargo, is that right?
I am.
Full-time employee there?
Yes, sir.
And the duties of the Board of Governors don't interfere with your work duties?
No, in fact, the bank is very supportive.
Thank you. Those are all the questions I have. Other members have questions for Mr. Granger? I don't hear or see any. We do have one person who wants to testify about this, and we're going to go ahead and get that out of the way now. And Mr. Granger, maybe you can stay on the line.
We've got one line.
We can only do one at a time. Okay. So, Mr. Granger, thank you so much for appearing, maybe at the end come back on. Yeah, I think we'll bring you back on. And can he listen? Or will he not be able to hear what's said here?
He can listen if he goes online and web streams it.
Ah.
But not through the bridge. The bridge is not. We ought to tell him this. The bridge is not working.
Right. Mr. Granger, we're having some technical difficulties today. And the reason I want to give you a break is that we've got one person, Teresa Obermeyer, wants to testify, I think, against your nomination. We're going to listen to what she has to say. I was going to give you the opportunity to come back and speak last on that. But I think you're going to have to hop over to an internet connection. Find this. We're streaming live on the internet through Alaska Legislature TV. You can watch there, listen there, and then come back on the telephone line to tell us any rebuttal information you might want to give us.
And that is Alaska Legislature TV.
I think that if you go to Google, type in Alaska Legislature, you'll bring up the streaming web feeds. Click on the Judiciary Committee at 1:30, and you should be able to watch us on your laptop or on your desktop.
Okay, thank you very much.
Give it a go.
Yes, thank you.
We'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's just take a 1 minute at ease. Committee, it's about 1:50 in the afternoon, and we are we've heard from Mr. Granger, who's been nominated by Governor Parnell to serve on the Alaska Bar Association, and we have one person who wants to testify about that, and that's I believe Teresa Obermeyer. Ms. Obermeyer, you're on the line.
Yes, please, Senator French.
Yeah, please put yourself on the record. You know the drill. You'll have about 3 minutes to tell us your views.
Okay. Well, what I regret, first of all, Senator French, is I did not hear what Mr. Granger had to say. I'm somebody that would like to always keep an open mind. I live in a very small town. I mean, I know Mr. Granger. I can't say I know him well. I knew his parents. I don't see a lot of change in Mr. Granger, though. I see a complete prejudice, if you'll forgive me. And I just feel a great sadness that I have to say that. Is Mr. Granger listening to my comments? I hope so.
He may be. We've directed him. We're having trouble with the bridge today, and so
I knew that.
Yeah, let me finish. So, let me finish. Let me finish, and we directed him to the Alaska Legislature TV web stream, and so that's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, and just to mention, I feel like I've been put through way too much now, and it's time really for this to be over. This has been going on for 27 years. You know, in terms of the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association, I couldn't believe it when the former Chief Justice, Alex Brenner, if you'll forgive me, Alex, descended to the Board of Governors. Nowhere else in the United States of America would a Chief Justice of a Supreme Court descend to a Board of Governors. That you know, of course, I'm always stupid. And I said, well, Alex got there, everything's going to go great. And, of course, then in last July, when there was the bar exam, there were unbelievably grave security breaches in that when my husband got to the test, there were 4 tests missing. Now, you see, you had to sign up for this by June 15th. So Deborah O'Regan did not know how to count as the bar exam began. My husband, of course, should not even have to take a 3-day test of minimal competence, but it's the only option he's ever been given. So at first I said, well, someone stole 4 exams. Then I said, no, Hollis, 4 different people stole the Alaska bar exam. It could have been that everyone in the room had the test except my husband. I can't answer that. All I know is that Tom, and you know Tom because you work with him, professionally wrote out what had gone on and gave it to the Board of Governors, including Chief Justice Brenner, and they didn't do any investigation, and they still function. I mean, Alice, my theme here is ethical people do not take a person's money once without a thought of helping them. But sir, you might say, well, Teresa, why does Tom pay for that and study for that and take that? Because that's the only option they've ever given it. Now, I would love it if I could find out that Bill Granger would be interested in asking questions and starting some creative thinking about how ridiculous the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association really is. I mean, Hollis, let's intellectually look at this. We have Wells Fargo, which is Bill Granger, and then we have 2 dentists that are on the Board of Governors as the public members. Where is any interest in public advocacy? It truly does not exist, sir. And, you know, just to also mention, I've asked lawyers, well, why don't you go over and see what you're paying $620 a year for? and they tell me it's a matter of protocol that they never get involved in what is going on with the Board of Governors. I mean, it really is beyond belief now, Hollis. I didn't know what else to say except to mention that for I myself have been mailing to the 60-member legislature since 1992. Everything that's going on, I've mailed 60 copies. I want you to know, I absolutely refuse to be a partisan. That, to me, is anti-intellectual. And so, to me, I join hands with any ethical person. And, yes, I will tell the truth. I don't believe that the practice of law or being a lawyer should be partisan. It should not only be politics, but that's all it is. That's all it seems to be. If you'll forgive me, sir, I can't really analyze anymore what it is. What it is its control. They do not license anyone that they're afraid will get in their way. And I'm just so sorry. I don't know. Truly, sir, I don't know what they do. And let me just also mention, see, I did not go to the Board of Governors at all until the first decade of this matter had gone on. And that was in 1994. I finally said, what in the world are these people doing? Now, Hollis, that was 17 years ago. And then, of course, I went for a while. Then they jailed me, of course. When the board was at court, I was jailed by Deborah Reagan and Stephen Van Gore, the employees that have been there since 1980. And again, I can forgive them. I feel sorrow. I don't know what to say. Let them do whatever they want to do. I feel so sorry, though, that they would continue to do this to my husband and myself and our four children. You know, Hollis, this is my children's home. And yes, their children, they're embarrassed. They say, why are those people doing that to my dad? I mean, truly, it's all so unbelievable now. But
Ms. Obermeier, Ms. Obermeier, Ms. Obermeier, yeah. I need you to wrap up, please.
Yes, I wanted to mention, I've had on a website the draft bill authorizing admission of reciprocal applicants to the Alaska Bar Association. That has been on a website really for at least 5 years. And there is and that is just to say that that people that are licensed in reciprocal states, of which I believe there are at least like 37, or I'm trying to remember the exact number out of the 50 states. It's a very high percentage. It might be over 40. But anyway, that they would be able to practice law here. Does that harm the public? Of course not. In fact, it reminds me of this wonderful Governor Hickel, because he kept saying, well, Tom, why don't they license you? If you do something wrong, they can just discipline you. I mean, instead, they just keep doing this. It's all beyond belief. But just to mention, Hollis, and lastly, there was a precedent for this, for licensing applicants by reciprocity in 1966. It's House Bill 520. It was Gil Johnson was actually licensed by this, and it says authorizing the Department of Labor to enter into reciprocal agreements with other states regarding wage claims and providing for an effective date. Now, by that bill,
Ms. Obermeier, I need you to wrap up, please. That means
that
needs to conclude.
I'm just
going to
finish by saying Gil Johnson and possibly others were licensed that way. I don't have all the information, but I know there's already been a precedent for authorizing reciprocal applicants to be licensed to practice law in Alaska. I feel it's a very appropriate. I'm becoming rather cynical like you people. I would like to always remain idealistic and optimistic. But, I mean, how many more years are we going to be put through this, Hollis? You're the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I hope that you will at least ask questions. Why, again, do we have Bill Granger on the Board of Governors? Again, a man that doesn't even know how to spell the name of his own high school? That was his resume, and I'm praying that was a typo.
Ms. Obermeier, we're finished now. Have a nice day.
Does anyone have a question?
We'll take a short out of these while we get...
We'll go back on the record. We've got Mr. Granger back. I don't know if there's anything there you want to respond to or not, Mr. Granger, but please feel free if you so choose.
No, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Granger? Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And Bill, it's Senator McGuire. You're a senator here. You're in my district, a constituent. I just want to say thank you for your service to the board for many, many years and your leadership. And I'm just assuming you had a spell check error in your page three. But when you look at it, just so you know for your future, up at under education, what Teresa was referring to is the Diamond High School without an A. So just so you have that for your future. But
yeah, okay.
No big deal. But thanks for everything that you've done, the service in our district, and as the vice president of the Board of Governors, you know, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Senator McGuire, maybe you'd like to make a motion.
I would. I would move that we forward the name of William Granger as a member of the Board of Governors for the Alaska Bar Association to the full body for consideration.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, Mr. Granger, congratulations. Your name will be passed on to the full legislature for confirmation as a process with which you're very well familiar. And we'll
thank
take
you, Senator French.
We'll take a short at ease while we get the next person on the line.
Bye-bye.
We're back on the record, and we're moving now to folks who have stepped forward to serve on the Alaska Police Standards Council, beginning first with Kelly Al-Zaharna. I hope I didn't go too far wrong on that name pronunciation.
You did better than I did the first time.
You're very kind. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about your interest in the Police Standards Council.
This is Chief Kelly Al-Zaharna. I work with the North Slope Borough Police Department up in Barrow, Alaska. I've been in law enforcement for 23 years. Almost 21 of those years have been with the North Slope Borough up in Barrow and in the state of Alaska. Over that course of experience, I have always been interested in maintaining and improving the high level of integrity and standards for law enforcement throughout the state, and this has been one mechanism that I have been able to be involved in that capacity.
And you are on the Police Standards Council now, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And did you go through the confirmation process, or were you placed on the board pending your confirmation?
Well, I'm re-upping. The first time that I was appointed, there was no confirmation. This is the first time I've been through the confirmation process.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I just didn't know if we'd had you before us before, or if you'd been through this interview or not, and so that was kind of the gist of my question. So why don't you go ahead and tell us why you're interested in police standards and what your experience has been so far serving.
Well, I'm interested in standards. Early on in my career, I became very interested in the training of police officers and helping them to better prepare themselves to keep themselves safe and the communities they serve, but just to help them have a better relationship with the people they serve. My first two departments I worked for were out of the state of New Mexico, and early on I got involved in training at an instructor level. When I moved to Alaska, I was hired by this department, and within 9 months I was promoted and put into a position to establish a training unit, basically, for our department, and I handled those responsibilities for approximately 4 years. While I was doing that, we created what we currently have as our mandatory training, which is a minimum of 40 hours that all officers have to get and maintain throughout the year. in my length of time with this department, I've had the wonderful opportunity to meet and work with other departments across the state, law enforcement, and us being as rural as we are, have been involved in talking about some of the issues that make it difficult for keeping and meeting law enforcement standards in some of our rural bush communities. So I've always had a high interest in that. As far as my participation on the board for the last 2 years, basically the bulk of what we have done is reviewed pending cases for certification or decertification and have just interacted with the other board members to help come to hopefully a good resolution to those situations.
And have you had to take decertification votes during your time on the council?
Yes.
And how do you approach that? How do you approach those? It's got to be a difficult decision. How do you approach that?
Well, basically, usually what happens is we've been presented throughout the process. It's usually not a very quick process. There's been an investigation, and the director has given us appropriate updates as to the status of any pending decertification. So when it actually reaches the point that we need to vote on it, I feel like we've been given adequate information to make a good decision. Although it is hard when you recognize that decertification, you know, highly likely ends somebody's career. Those are the level standards that we're set to protect, and so I take that very seriously.
That does bring up an interesting point. I mean, supposing a person is decertified by one state, what's the likelihood that you ever gain another police certificate somewhere else?
I'm not sure I could speak to the likelihood because each state is so different, and I think we've even found it sometimes difficult within our state. Actually, if they're decertified, they won't be able to work again in our state, but whether another state recognizes that or not, is state independent.
Thank you. We're getting indications from the audience that it's pretty much a death knell to a police career. You
great. Great that that's a consistent answer, not great.
Right, yeah. And how often does the Police Standards Council meet?
We meet twice a year, usually once in December in conjunction with the Executive Development Conference and once in May in conjunction with the Alaska Peace Officers Association Conference.
And so you've attended two or three meetings now?
Oh, yes, three. My first one was June 2009.
Okay. And so far, the experience seems to agree with you.
Yes, I greatly enjoy the people I work with.
Thanks. Those are the questions I have. Other members of the committee? Don't see any. Senator McGuire, thank you.
I do. Thank you, Kelly, for your service already and coming before us here today. I just have a few questions for you. My first question for you is so it looks like in July of 1987 to 89, you worked for Las Cruces Police Department, and then in 89 of April, you switched over and worked to the New Mexico State University Police Department from April 1989 to June 1990. And I wanted to know, both seem short, and there was a quick switch, and I just wanted to find out what the reason was for that.
The first department was starting my career in law enforcement, it was with the city, and realistically, I had a college degree, and I had started a career, and I wasn't earning enough money to get off of food stamps. New Mexico was one of the lowest paying states as far as law enforcement went. So I made the switch from the city department to the university because I believe the pay was approximately $100 more a month. And I was also able, I already had a bachelor's degree, but I was able to take additional courses at the university for free as part of my job. I did that for that length of time and just recognized that I had higher aspirations than living on food stamps. And somebody brought the North Slope Borough Police Department flyer to my attention, and I went for it.
Excellent. I've got two more questions, if
please.
I could, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. My next question is, in May of 2005, it looks like you decided to go back and get a Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership, which I think is excellent. I wanted to know why you made that decision. to go ahead and go back to school to get your Master of Arts, to give the opportunity to tell the committee why you did, and then where is Azusa Pacific University?
Azusa Pacific University is in Azusa, California. It's a suburb of Los Angeles.
Okay.
And it was a half-distance education, half-on-campus program, so I had to be on campus for 2 weeks each semester that I participated. And I chose the organizational leadership program because I felt no matter what I ended up doing in my future, that it was the type of degree that could help me across disciplines, no matter what I chose to move on next. I did have a bachelor's degree, but it was from 1985, and I just wanted, I've always been interested in continuing to learn, and I just wanted to keep myself updated.
Wonderful. Okay, and then my final question just centers around, through the chair, around some of the recent things that have happened in my community in Anchorage. Are you aware of the conviction of Officer Rawlings?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so to that end, I'm very concerned about that. Women in my community are very concerned about that. We also had a similar case also in the North Slope Borough, as you recall, of a police officer using his badge and his authority to rape women as well. And I wanted to know on the Police Standards Council if this is something that has been a priority for discussion as to what we can do in terms of training our police officers about using the power of your badge for sexual abuse, and if we haven't, if it can be incorporated, if there are specialists in this area that can come in and talk about the dangers of it, the temptation of it. I'm not sure what goes through the mind, frankly, of somebody in that position. I'm not trying to sit here and pretend to know or judge, but obviously we have in Alaska now seen at least two high-profile cases, one of which actually ratcheted up to the point of the death of a young woman in western Alaska. But when we traced it back, we found out that the officer in that case, a state trooper in that case, had been involved in multiple accounts of pulling young women, vulnerable women, into his police vehicle, assaulting them, and then telling them not to tell. Finally, a death occurred. In the case of Officer Rawlings, fortunately for us, we had a brave young woman who was willing to come forward and tell us in time, before it ratcheted up to that level, that over just a short period of 2.5 years, we had six at least rapes that we know of that had occurred while these women were handcuffed in substations in Muldoon and other places. And I'm very concerned about it as a lawmaker, and I just want to know if you're concerned about it and what we intend to do at the Police Standards Council about it.
Absolutely, I'm concerned about it, and I deal with those type of issues day to day in my current position in dealing with our officers, and we provide training, and I make my expectations very clear as far as the behavior and performance of our officers in any capacity. As far as the Police Standards Council goes, we have discussed those issues when we're actually dealing with cases like that. In my time on the council, we have not had an overall discussion about that type of topic, but certainly it could be warranted.
Okay, and if I could just wrap up, Mr. Chairman, I would love to see you, Kelly, please, I guess I'm requesting you personally, humbly, me, one member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, to please take that on in a leadership role. I would like to see, and I will put my request in writing, to the council, to see you take this up as a topic of sincere importance at the Police Standards Council, by which training will occur for all members, what goes through the mind, how people can get off the path, the temptation of the power, all of those kinds of things. What are the warning signs to look for from fellow officers when they see that behavior happening, how to report back to their superiors? And then finally, what are the rights that you can inform young women? I grew up in a wonderful family. My parents told me forever that if you're ever pulled over by a police officer in a dark place, in a place you're uncomfortable, you have a right to wait and drive to a police station and pull over there. You do not have to be pulled over in a dark alley or a dark place. But though that information is not available to every young woman. And so what kind of information can be available to the public, and what kind of training can we give the young men and young women who are out there serving our state proudly and with honor, so that they're not embarrassed by other of their colleagues who fall into those conundrums?
Certainly that type of training should be made available at all department levels. Of course, everybody knows the issue with Alaska is our departments vary so drastically as far as any type of training that would be mandated from a two-person department versus dealing with an agency like the troopers. But I believe that, I speak for myself, but I believe for other department heads also that certainly is a priority, and we do everything we can on the department level, and it is certainly a task that could be moved to a higher priority within the Police Standards Council.
Thank you.
And just as a follow-up, and those are good, excellent questions. Thank you, Senator McGuire. Will the council go through the motions of decertifying Officer Rollins, or is it just sort of taken as a given that he's gone away for 50 years?
Am I allowed to ask if a director of Rabeck is
The director is here. He's been making helpful, but maybe we can just go ahead and have him come forward.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator.
We should get you on the record. I've been relying on your hand signals for a while.
You owe me, Kelly. Senator, I'm Terry Vrabeck. I'm the director of Police Standards. Senator, your reference your question. The Rollins case is currently in the council. There are some rules that we have to follow in procedural law when there's pending criminal cases. Since it is now done, in fact, I can tell you as of about 11 o'clock this morning, I have a message into the attorney for Mr. Rollins as we discuss his police certification. It is an active case. The council has expressed its concern to move forward with decertification. Sometimes we work with the respective attorneys where we get the ex-officer to surrender their certificate, which basically means they're turning it in if they lose it. And so as of, like I said, this morning, I'm in contact with that attorney since the case is now over.
Mr. Vrabeck, thank you. Further questions?
I could just ask
Senator Passman.
You know, I suspect looking back that in 2020 hindsight there were signs or signals that were missed. Is there going to be an effort when it comes to, I would suspect that there are objective signals that within a department that one could look at and try to weed out those things before they get to such a magnitude, and just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Through the chair, Senator Pascovan, sometimes there are signs that are seen. It's a matter of do they get reported. As Senator French mentioned, even in this past case, there was someone that came forward, but sometimes it does not happen for a while. Our officers from the day one at the police academy get extensive training in ethics and behavior. It's a priority of ours in the police academy when we train them. Unfortunately, and keep in mind, between the correctional and police officers, we have 3,000 officers. You're going to have a few that sometimes are not doing their job correctly, and in this case have gone, definitely off the far end into potential criminal issues. As a whole, our state does very well with our police officers compared to some others. Now, individually, some departments do extensive training in these areas. As Ms. Alzahana has mentioned, some departments do more than others. We are always looking at new potential training, and I can tell you on this issue alone with the ethics and integrity of officers, I have just recently had a meeting with Commissioner Master's staff, and we are working with the Police Academy again on additional training to see what can we do differently that helps officers make the right decisions. I can tell you it's a priority. They get it from day one, the first day at the Police Academy, they get hit with it. It's a very important thing. Respectfully, some of these officers that go bad, so to say, it happens, and it's very unfortunate. We take it very serious, and I think our departments do a pretty good job with their internal affairs investigations. Anchorage did a good job investigating theirs.
Thank you, Senator McGuire.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank you, too, Mr. Raybeck, for your work. And you heard my comments and my fervent. And I just love to hear any comments you had on that. You've made some. You can expect a letter from me, and I'd love one back that just memorializes the statements that you've made here today with respect to the conversations you've had with Commissioner Masters. I think is a really great person, and the fact that you recognize the seriousness of what's happened, not only here, but as I mentioned earlier in the case of the state trooper earlier in Alaska's history. And I recognize that there are 3,000 hard-serving employees that put their lives on the line and don't deserve, if you will, that sort of dark cloud that comes over. But I would like to see in particular, what is the reporting, the right, if you will, or the opportunity to report signs? As Senator Pascavan mentioned, I think there's a culture. It's difficult sometimes to report on your peers. Is there an anonymous way to report to a superior something that you suspect about a fellow officer that you'd like to have followed up on? Is there a way for a member of the public who's been arrested to make a report that they would like to see followed up on without fear of retribution about the way that they have been fondled or handled, perhaps during the process of their initial arrest? What kind of systems are in place? And so I'd like to hear more about it. I am very, very concerned that it went on for so long. And I in general, I would like to see something come out, and I would just encourage you to consider, and I see Sue Sandcliffe there, who's been a real advocate for women, a statement to the women of Alaska in particular that reaffirms their safety. I can tell you that women everywhere are talking about this, and so that they feel like the Police Safety Standards Council has looked at this and takes it seriously and is making an effort, if you will.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, I would be glad to actually put this formally on our agenda at our next council meeting.
Thank you.
And that would also be, because it's, I mean, we would address all our issues, and it would also be a public meeting.
Thank you.
If you would like a follow-up meeting, I can go over some of those other issues also with you where we are trying to work in some of those areas. And just as an aside, for one thing that we try to help police departments with, some agencies like the state troopers, Anchorage Police, Chief Alzaharna's department, they automatically do extensive backgrounds upon hiring, and that usually includes polygraphs, psychological tests, those type of things. But they're expensive.
Yeah.
Some of the small departments have had problems doing those, and we've assisted with police standards funds to assist those agencies with some of those costs because we feel it's very important. The screening we do on the front end with a psychological test or a polygraph, we sometimes weed out problem or potentially problematic officers. So we believe in it, and we've seen great success in that. And I will be glad to follow up on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator McGuire. Further questions for either Ms. Alzaharna or Mr. Raybeck? Kind of combined two hearings here, but I think it was worthwhile to kind of flesh out a little bit about the Police Standards Council. So further questions or wrap up with Ms. Alzaharna? Hearing and seeing none, I'd solicit a motion. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move that we forward the name of Kelly Alzaharna on to the full body for a vote.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations, Ms. Alzaharna. Your name will be forwarded on to the full legislature for a confirmation vote towards the end of the legislative session.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Let's turn now to Rebecca Heyman. Rebecca Heyman is the next person up. Rebecca Heyman from King Salmon. Keep calling out to her.
Great.
In just a minute.
It's great that it's so diverse.
Yeah.
That's a nice.
Yeah.
Thanks. And we're turning now to Rebecca Heyman, who I understand is now on the line. Ms. Heyman, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record and tell us about your interest in the Alaska Police Standards Council.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Heyman, and I live out in King Salmon, Alaska, which is a small bush community on Bristol Bay. And I have lived and worked out here for 12 years and become very attached to the community out here. For about 2 years, I've worked for Safe and Fear-Free Environment, which is an advocacy program for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. So those subjects have become very critical in my understanding of the community and the things that go on here. And I have become very aware that the levels of domestic violence and sexual assault in our state and in Southwest Alaska particularly are very high. And it's a very common problem throughout the villages. And as I've worked with the district attorney and with local police, I've just come to understand that this is a very long and complicated process for victims as they go through the judicial system, and that it's something that is very difficult for them to get through and to understand. And so I believe I can bring to the council the viewpoint of the victim and how they see law enforcement and and the law in general in light of their very limited resources and experience.
Ms. Heyman, thank you. For the committee's information, I'll just point out that the Police Standards Council asks that there be four members of the public, members on the board, two at least from communities of a population of 2,500 or less. I'm going to guess that King Salmon qualifies for that last item. Ms. Heyman, just for my information, what brought you to Alaska?
My husband, we were a young married couple expecting our first child, and my husband came up here to work for the Katmai National Park as a scientist, and he has, we've been here ever since. We came in 1998.
And when did you go to work for Safe and Fear Free? That was in 2008?
Yes, I believe so.
And what
a little over 2 years ago.
Sure, and what prompted your interest in that field?
Well, I had been involved in the community mostly in social ways for years, and come to know the people and the families pretty well. And as you live in a community like this, you start to see the difficulties that people have and the problems that maybe go back generations for some people or are related to alcohol or drug abuse. And I'm very aware of some of the problems in our community. And after my children got a little older, I started asking around for volunteer opportunities, wanting to volunteer for Office of Children's Services or some different social services that were in the area. And someone suggested to me that I should apply for this job. And I hadn't really even thought about it before, but I read up on what they do and became interested, and that was kind of the beginning for me.
Great. And have you attended a meeting of the Police Standards Council yet?
No, I have not. I've done some reading about what the Police Standards Council does, but that's pretty much the limit of my experience so far.
Great. Questions for Ms. Hammond from other members of the committee. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Ms. Hammond. This is Senator McGuire. Did you get to hear the discussion that I had with the former applicant for the Police Standards Council?
No, they were unable to patch me in earlier because of technical difficulties, so I have not been able to hear anything else.
Okay, so I'll just
in this meeting so far.
I'll just summarize so that I don't go into repetitive mode for the members here. We have Terry Brabeck, who is the head of the Police Standards Council, and we also had an applicant, Kelly Al-Zaharna, who is the chief of police in Barrow, who is another applicant who is applying, and I asked her a question about whether or not she believed it was a priority to bring to the attention of the police, Alaska Police Standards Council, the issue that had recently come to light with Officer Rawlings in Anchorage, and the issue more broadly of the potential abuse of officers with their badge in a sexual manner of women, and if that were part of the training and if it had been brought forward as an agenda item. She answered yes, she thought it was very important. It hadn't been on the agenda up to her, you know, up to this point. And then Terry came forward and very eloquently talked about the fact that it was part of the training, but that he was going to put it to the forefront of the next meeting. And so I guess at this point my question would simply be, are you aware of that case? Did you follow it in the paper? Did you have any comments? And I would assume, based on your background and your comments, that you would be committed to that. But any thoughts you have about, you know, training police to be respectful of women and not using their badge for sexual abuse?
Yes, I believe that is a very serious problem, and I did follow the case a bit in the papers. I'm sure I don't know all the details, but I was aware of it. And that is something I think that very much needs to be addressed. It's not something I've had experience with police officers that I've worked with in the past, but I do think often there's a maybe less serious but still a problematic lack of understanding among police officers for the effect that they might have as a police officer and a male interviewing them after something like a sexual assault. In many cases, we've had victims that the only interviews that they had were with police officers, two male police officers in a room. They felt very unable to tell their story very well, and that there really is no female law enforcement in our part of the state at all. And so it could be a very serious problem out here, too.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Other questions from members of the committee for Ms. Hammond? I don't hear or see any. Again, thank you so much for your willingness to serve. And with that, I would solicit a motion. Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chair, I move that we forward the name of this nominee on to the full body for consideration.
Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations, Ms. Hammond. Your name will be forwarded on to the full legislature for a vote on your confirmation to the Police Standards Council towards the end of this legislative session.
Thank you.
And we'll take a short at ease while we get the next person on the line. Is that right?
Yeah.
back on the record, and I think we just have one final confirmation. I don't know that Mr. Burton is going to make it today. He is not, and so we're taking up Bernie Troglio, who I know well and support strongly. But that aside, Ms. Troglio, welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about your interest in the Police Standards Council.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Yes, my name is Bernice Troglio, and I'm currently seeking and humbly asking to continue my service with the State of Alaska as a council member.
And just for the committee's information, you are serving currently, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And how long have you been on the council?
Mr. Chair, I've been on the council since 2008.
So this would be your third year. And tell us about your experience so far. Are you enjoying your service? Apparently you're seeking to continue it. Just tell us about your approach to your duties on the council.
Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'd be honored to do so. As I said, my name is Bernice Troglio. A little bit about myself. I currently hold a position as a probation officer for. My job title is statewide sex offender mental health program manager under the Division of Probation and Parole. My career as a PO started in January of 99 as a line officer working out of the Anchorage Probation Office. And in 2000, I was promoted as a supervisor to a PO3 position and was assigned to supervise the sex offender mental health unit at the Anchorage Probation Office. And then in April of 2009, I was promoted to my current position. And I'm happy to say that the state has afforded me the opportunity to remain working with the sex offender population for the last 10 years. I have continued to gain an in-depth amount of experience because the state has allowed me to hold this position. And for that, I'm very grateful. And as I previously stated, I began my career in January of 99. And at that time, I took an oath, and that oath was to abide by the Code of Ethical Professional Conduct. I took that oath very seriously, and I live by that whether on duty or off. I have a very high standard, and I believe all law enforcement officers should hold and uphold high standards as well. We all take an oath to live accordingly. I was searching for an opportunity to serve Alaska, and found that that the Alaska Police Standards Council had an open seat. So I looked on the website, and I read the missions and the visions of the council, and I thought, wow, what a great fit for me. Because as I said, I have a very high standard, and I have a moral compass that I am living by. So as I read on and I saw that the mission and the vision was to maintain a highly trained and positively motivated personnel, professional capable of meeting law enforcement standards and performance. We were to build on a foundation, establish career paths, and to increase overall efficiency and effectiveness of all law enforcement by assuring a climate of professionalism and conscientious standards. And I love that word. And I emphasize conscientious standards. Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to serve Alaska both as a council member since 2008 and as a law enforcement officer. I thank you for your time and consideration in my appointment.
Thank you. Excellent opening statement. And I'll just point out for the committee and ask you to comment that your duties as a PO4 somewhat overlap with your duties on the Police Standards Council. I see in your resume that one of your duties is to enforce policies and procedures and to recommend disciplinary action and the council staff on violation of policy and procedure and to write procedural memos to assure understanding of duties. And you've been doing that for a number of years now.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Other questions? Senator Coghill has a question for you.
First of all, thank you for serving and being willing to serve and comments on the code of conduct. Appreciate that. Also, I wanted to say thank you for your work on the Internet Crimes Against Children. We in this committee have been stand in stark, I don't even know how to put it. It was mind-numbing what goes on in Alaska, so thank you for that work. But that also brings up the question, and I asked one of the troopers at that, how do you deal with it? And is there a way that the police standards looks at those people who have to deal with some of those rougher circumstances that maybe we haven't anticipated in the police standards up to this point for accountability? I understand this is the toughest work, and I greatly appreciate it. I just wanted to know, it's a new world, and so it's something that you guys are all going to have to watch.
And you're referring to the how do we deal personally, living, you know, inundated to this type of information on a daily basis,
sure.
Or how is the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force dealing with the ongoing increase child pornography cases?
Actually, I was concerned with how the police workforce deal with it to make sure that we don't end up ruining police officers in that very, very tough business.
You know, and that's a very good question, Mr. Committee Member through the Chair. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force is currently developing a committee to deal with the we call it the on the job trauma, so to speak. So, that's been. I went to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force conference in 2010, and I went to a session on the impact on law enforcement officers, and it was a session that lasted. That was a 2 to 3 hour session, and it talked about different ways and that we could look into. And I know that one of the chairs of the task force is what's her name? She's an attorney for the Audrey Renshin is one of the other chairs of the task force, and she's currently looking into that part of developing a committee to develop some standards around dealing with the job and the information that we're constantly subjected to.
And Mr. Chairman, I know that, for example, if somebody does a sting or has to go undercover, there's an expectation that they're going to get out of it. But this one is a little different. But I'm sure that they overlap in somewhat on the standards. I just wanted to highlight that issue, especially in light of what Senator McGuire is bringing up on making sure that those police officers who do end up going bad can be very, very destructive.
Absolutely. And it's a police officer or it's a correctional officer, it's felt by everyone across the board. To me personally, it's devastating. It's devastating to all our law enforcement officers. One of our officers chooses to not abide by the code of ethics that we all take when we become law enforcement officers. And thank you for that acknowledgement. I appreciate that.
Excellent. Other questions? And just to let you know, Bernie, we have been sort of having a running commentary through this afternoon about the Rollins case, and as we're talking to members of the Police Standard Council, Senator McGuire, has brought up over and over sort of the shock of the public at seeing a male officer abusing women like that, and the need to for there to be an avenue for officers to perhaps report on another officer. I know that's not something that people want to do, but certainly someone like yourself that has those high standards has to know that when you see them being broken, someone has to speak out.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
Thank you. Other questions? I don't see any. I'd solicit a motion at this point. Senator Wilbekowski.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the nomination of Bernice Troglio to the full body for consideration.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations. Ms. Troglio, your name will be forwarded on to a full meeting of both bodies of the legislature for a vote on your confirmation towards the end of this legislative session. And if there's nothing else to come before the committee, please sign the report before you leave. But with that, we are adjourned.